Hello, I'm Rafik, and you're watching the Garbled Twistery channel.
Hey, it's Garbled Twistery, and we are breaking into this sweet, sweet 1816 election, looking at VP candle dates. Who is next, you ask? Why, it's that sassafras Supreme Homecoming Court guy, Johnny Marshall. And since we've considered him before, we're going to check in on him again. This is just a check-in. Yep, this is going to be a rebroadcast with the new info at the 27 minute and 34 second mark. Okay, so let's begin with a reintroduction. Dun dun! Your Honor, allow me to set the stage. Virginia, a log cabin. Johnny Marshall is born. His dad's name was Thomas the Tank Engine, and his mom was your average Mary. Well, not so average, considering she is Thomas Jefferson's straight-up cousin. But whatever. When the suspect is 5, they move a little closer to civilization. Johnny's mommy had some real family problems. This is because grandma went and fell in love with the delivery boy. If you have money, you're not really supposed to fall in love with the delivery boy. Don't blame me, I don't make the rules. Johnny's dad, Thomas, he had a job looking at land for money. Yeah, he was working with Lord TurboTax and paying for not only the bills, but the Lambo that way. He didn't spend that money on the house, though. Johnny still grew up in that dinky little log cabin with his moms, his pops, and 15 younger brothers and sisters. 15! What were his parents eating? Jeez! But yeah, growing up, everybody liked good old Johnny Bravo. His sense of humor was, like, so on point. Especially for a kid who never went to school. Wait, back that up. This dude never went to school? His parents had all that money, and they didn't send Johnny Bravo to school? That's just wacko. I mean, he did go to school for 1 year, yeah, and in that single year, he made friends with freaking James Man Ray, of all people. What kind of backwards luck does this child have? But I mean, even though he wasn't in school, his parents made him read all sorts of super complicated books that were like 10 times his grade level against his will, and he was tutored by some Scottish Christian priest man, so that's where all the school money was going, I guess. Well, not really, because the tutor literally lived with them. His tutoring was what was paying for his room and board. I really wish college worked that way. Hey, I could teach the dean how to play a mean game of Mancala if you give me my own frat house. Wait a second. College does work that way if you have money. Where was I? Oh yeah. Johnny was a papa's boy. His dad was literally his favorite person. I know. Cute. Later on, his dad buys a new estate with all that spicy surveyor money, and we're in Virginia, so 9 times out of 10 there's some slaves in the mix too. Anyways, Lexington takes a warning shot at Concord, and Johnny and his dad, Tommy, want to see some action. So they go join their local Virginia gunslinger club, and by the next year, our boy Johnny is already a freaking lieutenant of the Continentate Armée. And he was there for some straight trials and tribulations, okay? He was at the battle where brandy meets the wine. He was at Forge's Valley starving half to death without a potato chip ration in sight. He went through the ringer, okay? And Johnny was like, quote, "Until we get some food in this Valley Forge refrigerator, I'm cashing in on my furlough, okay?" Unquote. And that's exactly what he did. Went to freaking William & Mary College, studied the law, did the limbo, just like all the basic founding fathers. I mean, he did go back to the army, but like the fun parts were pretty much over by the time he ended up ending his furlough. But hey, Virginia people liked how he was freaking smarty, smarty pants man, so he let him be in the Virginia House of Delegates. When he's in the Virginia House of Deli Meats, Johnny decides to hang out with a bunch of people who have trained themselves to not be poisoned by drinking Tide water. I'm not kidding. This obviously includes his partner in crime, Man Ray. Oh, and also, Johnny's father-in-law had all sorts of weird Lannister connects and got Johnny to be the youngest dude in the Council of the State of Virginia so far. He also got to be a scribe in the courtroom. I mean, he did go to school for that. Oh, And while he was doing that, our boy Johnny was also trying to get his own lawyer business off the ground. But this was proving to be super difficult because the economy was out of whack at the time. He ended up buying his cousin's law offices. Don't worry, King Edmund from Narnia isn't going to miss it too much. Oh, and Johnny Marshall was making a name for himself in the courtroom. He even had his own theme song.
Sometimes some crimes go slipping through the cracks, but this one young gun is picking up the slack. There's no case too big, no case too small. When you need help, just call John Marshall. Courtroom hero,
John Marshall.
Not a zero. You know it never fails once he's involved. Somehow, whatever's wrong gets solved. John Marshall. Courtroom hero.
I think you get the point. This dude was taking cases like nobody's business, okay? Johnny Boy was even defending his dad's boss in some big fat case over a bunch of Virginia land. So as we know, the Articles of Confetti album drops, a bunch of people start having rebellions in the street over it, and that's when Johnny Bravo realizes this album is trash. He thinks the federal government needs to wear the pants in the relationship. So when this new golden record came out at freaking PhillyCon, Johnny Bravo was freaking obsessed, y'all. And when it was Virginia's turn to seal the deal on this new constituti, you can bet your bottom dollar he was teaming up with Billy Madison to do some persuasive lawyer Jedi mind tricks to get the delegates to see their side of things. And yeah, the constituti got ratified in Virginia. So everybody finally agrees on the constituti. Jorge Washington wins the Iron Throne, we know this, and Jorge likes watching Johnny Bravo so much that he makes our guy the freaking official U.S. ace attorney for Virginia. Yeah, as Turkish philosopher Adele once said, we're rolling in the deep, baby. Or at least we thought we were. Johnny rejected it like a freaking spoiled brat. He had George Washington's heart inside of his hand, but he played it to the beat. So as we know, at this point, the country is getting split apart into Federalist and Democrat Republican parties because they're losing their minds over there in France and nobody knows how to deal with that. Johnny, he sides with the Federalist tea sippers. I mean, his opinions on the Articles of Confetti should have indicated as much, but yeah, he was in deep. I'm serious. I say this because Alexander Hammy Tammy literally had our guy meddling in Virginia on his behalf to stop the Democrat Republicans from spreading the French gospel music. But yeah, Johnny was all about keeping the taxes high, the foreign policy neutral, the military strong, hashtag just Federalist things. Lo and behold, George Washington comes crying to Johnny's front porch again on his hands and knees talking about some, please be the Attorney General, only to get shot down again because Johnny Bravo over here likes to play hard to get. That said, Johnny did fool around a little with some powerful positions in Virginia. For instance, he ended up being Virginia's substitute attorney general for a hot second, so it looks like he's at least a little thirsty for that sweet, sweet power. Anyways, Johnny keeps doing fancy lawyer stuff, and he ends up at the freaking Supreme Court, and he's trying to convince everybody that it's okay for the U.S. to just not pay the tea sippers back for any debts we owed them. I mean, he lost that case, but he was so good at making his case that everybody was whispering in the bleachers or whatever. Just goes to show that people will talk about you behind your back, whether you're doing a good job or a terrible job. So pro tip, be your best self when you can. So that covers everything up through Jorge Washington's playground days. What was Johnny Bravo up to when Johnny Avocado was sitting on the iron toilet? Well, France was throwing a hissy fit and being all passive aggressive because of Federalist One and stuff. And guess what? Johnny Bravo was the third man of the three-man ninja team that was sent to France to go calm the baguette people down. That's right. The three-man ninja squad were all potential candidates for Hokage. Isn't that crazy? That's wild. As we know, they met with Talleyrand, only for him to ask for freaking bribes. And Johnny Bravo? He was having none of it and went straight home with Piccaninny. And as we know, Tom and Jerry would end up staying only to get blamed for everything. But I mean, Johnny Bravo made a big fat mistake too. He wrote letters to Johnny A about the whole thing. Congress was all like, show the tapes. And Johnny A showed the tapes, and everybody got all super mad at France and stopped trading with them. And this whole not war started where the toy boats were firing cannonballs at each other left and right. And Johnny Bravo was all about treating Baguette Land like trash for trying to pull a fast one like that. But those acts that targeted immigrant voters, that one seemed pretty suspicious to him. He even wrote about it in the local paper. Quote, look, we can't have laws like this causing a ruckus while Europe is being all sorts of passive-aggressive to us for no reason. We need to make like the Beatles and come together, unquote. Anyways, Johnny Bravo comes home from Baguette Land, and he's planning on doing this bread-and-butter hometown hero lawyer nonsense, but lo and behold, Jorge Washington stops him, and is all like, quote, dude, there's this crazy man who's running for Virginia Congress, and this crazy man is a crazy man. Please run against him for my sake, unquote. And Johnny was probably feeling guilty about all those times he freaking rejected Jorge's request, so he decides to run for big boy Congress as a favor, and get this, he wins. I mean, maybe it's because everybody liked how he immediately went home as soon as France started acting funny, or maybe it's because he liked Patrick or Henry or whatever his name is. Oh yeah, and Johnny A tried to get him to be a supreme of the courts doing all that, but Johnny Bravo, he was like, ha-ha, nice try, no. He wins the Congress seat, and he shows up, and of course he ends up becoming a leader of the Diet Federalist Party. You know what I mean. Federalist stuff, but without the calories. He got to have his big fat speech talking about how it's okay for the government to banish citizens from the country when they get out of hand. Yeah, more on that fiasco later. But for now, I'm going to say that that speech saved President Johnny A's rotund tuchus. But yeah, Johnny Bravo was so freaking talented that Johnny A didn't even know what to do with this man. Like, first Johnny A was all like, you're the Secretary of War now. But then he was like, wait, I changed my mind. You're the Secretary of State now. And for once, Johnny Bravo was all like, okay, I'll try it. I mean, the real reason why Johnny Bravo was made Secretary of State for President Johnny A was because the guy before him was meddling. And why was that guy meddling? Because he was working for Hammy Tammy. Johnny A fired that guy's tuchus. But yeah, Johnny Bravo was hired into literally a freaking ridiculous situation. I have the original transcript of Johnny A's orders right here. Quote, Johnny, you're Secretary of State now. That means you have to end this not war with France, get Spain to not be mad at us anymore, and deal with this heaping pile of debt that we owe to a bunch of African countries. Got it? We share a name. Don't disappoint me, unquote. I know. That's a tall order, but our Johnny did manage to help stop the whole not war that was happening with the Baguettes by having a not peace conference because we were not at war. So the big fat 1800 election comes around, and all of a sudden the Democrat Republicans are sitting on the golden toilet, we know this, when that reality show nonsense tiebreaker happened, Johnny didn't vote. He didn't want anything to do with that. So yeah. President Johnny A was on his way out, but he had one more trick up his sleeve, which was to change all the court judges in the middle of the night while everyone's sleeping. What does that have to do with our Johnny? Well, here's how it went down, okay? Chief Justice Oliver Twist, we've talked about him before, he has to step down because he's running a fever for the past 5 months. Johnny A tries to get Johnny J to replace the man, but Johnny J was all like, excuse me? That gavel is meaningless with the mac and cheese president around. But his rejection letter doesn't show up on Johnny A's doorstep until 2 months before Tommy sits on the Iron Throne. So lame duck Johnny is losing it. And our guy is all like, get a hold of yourself, man. I have a friend named Willie. He could be the Chief Justice. But John Adams puts his finger on Johnny Bravo's lips. Quote.
You're the
achieve justice now.
Unquote. I mean, how could you reject that? Easily, apparently, the Senatete was really dragging their feet about Johnny Bravo over here. But they eventually had to give him the job. Because, well, they couldn't quickly find anyone more qualified, and our Johnny didn't even want the job anyways. So the Senate kind of shrugged and sighed. I mean, of course he kept doing Secretary of State stuff until the power transition had to come. But later on, Johnny A is going to brag about how forcing this job onto Johnny Bravo was the greatest gift to the freaking country. Why would he say that? Don't worry, there's still a lot to get to. Here comes the fun part. No, really. Make sure that pants buckle is tight, because some wild shenanigans are about to be afoot. Johnny's in the courtroom. He's the Chief Justice in the era of martial law has begun. He's sitting in the Capitol with an OL with all these old school schmucks. J.P. Morgan Chase, Robert Pattinson, Alfred Ultra Less Is More. A whole bunch of people that either Jorge or Johnny A. hired. Don't get me wrong, the courtroom is trash, okay? It ruled on 63 cases, and they're almost all cases that nobody even cares about or remembers, okay? The place is a dump. All the fun cases were in the state courts. This is why Johnny Bravo didn't want his job. But hey, this dude's gonna change the whole game, because he does not like wasting time or energy. Okay, so it's Johnny Marshall Law time. What is the first order of business? Let's cut it out with all the indecisiveness. Majority rules from here on out. Bam. I'm serious. Before Johnny showed up, these judges were out here writing academic essays for every court case that came their way. Johnny showed up and was like, nuh-uh, we can't have any indecisive judges in this hizzle. This is the Supreme Court, not TGI Fridays. Majority rules. The squad only got together 2 months a year. The rest of the time, the judges were doing state stuff. When the court was in session, the judges basically locked themselves in a room to talk about cases and deliberate or whatever. Decisions usually took only a couple of days. And do not doubt me when I tell you that John Marshall was the Naomi Campbell of the courtroom. This dude knew what was going on in 3 seconds and he did not hesitate to tell it like it is. And nobody could stop him because he didn't want this job anyways. This man knew what you were thinking and got you to think about what he was thinking before you were even thinking about it. By 1811, that court was filled with Democrat Republicans. But guess what? Didn't matter. He had them brainwashed. But Johnny was super flexible, too. Like, he wanted to make sure his teammates had a say, too. Yes, he was the exact opposite of a pushover, but he wasn't a tyrant, either. And Johnny wasn't even, like, checking the books to see if what he was saying was making sense. Like, he literally delegated the rule book checking to one of the other justices. But enough of that. Let's get to the real beef and potatoes of the conversation. The cases. I now call the case of Marlboro versus Tommy Pickles in session. Let's enter a deliberation so we can review the homework answers on page 72 in the textbook.
Meanwhile, in the deliberation room.
While I, Johnny Bravo, was the Secretary of State, there were 42 new justices I didn't have time to commission, because the president at the time was a loser duck. It was the new Tommy Pickles administration's job to take care of this nonsense, and they still haven't given this commission to, like, 20 of these new justices. I call the plaintiff, Billy Marlboro, to the stand.
Are you telling the truth in all of it?
I don't lie about my money. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would please examine the cardboard box to my left. Ha ha, made you look. Objection, overruled. But I didn't get to say what I was objecting to. Overruled. Jeez, tough crowd. Let me get to the point. I just want my commission. I was told I was getting a commission for this gig, and Tommy Pickles needs to pay up. I rest my case, Your Honor.
Defendant, please sit down. I am the president, Your Honor. Let me say stuff. I don't even want this job. Say your piece and be done with it. Thank you. Listen, Marlboro, you're not going to be a judge by the time my administration is through with you. The only reason you're here is because of Johnny A's lame duck shenanigans, and you don't deserve this commission. Objection! Take that back! I said what I said! Order in the court! Defendant, stop behaving like you're on VH1.
Okay, Your Honor, I'll chill. I'm just saying that your buddy Tommy Pickering is already in the hot seat, and soon you might be resting on your laurels too. I rest my case, Your Honor.
That wasn't a case. That was a threat, you ruffian. The court calls the other defendant, Secretary of State Billy Madison, to the stand.
Sir?
What is it now?
Secretary Madison refuses to appear in court because he thinks nobody's allowed to sue the government.
Well, that's super disrespectful. I've come to a decision. Yes, it is legal to sue the government, and Billy Madison is going to pay the commission right here, right now. Okay, and I know y'all tried to write a whole law so this court wouldn't be able to do this, but that law isn't constitutional, so it doesn't exist anymore. It doesn't exist anymore, Buster.
That's right, you tell him, Your Honor, give me my money!
High five. So yeah, Judge Johnny was making power moves. And one would think that he was power hungry, but remember, Johnny Bravo is also Naomi Campbell. He's just trying to do his job as conveniently and efficiently as possible and go home. No, but really, Johnny Bravo's just getting started, okay? Play the Law and Order sound effect again.
Dun dun! Dun.
I now call the case of Samuel J.P. Morgan Chase versus the Haters to order.
Hello, Your Honor. I'm Samuel Chase. President Tommy Pickles and his haters are trying to take my job as an Associate Justice away from me.
Well, duh, you're a stinking Federalist. Get out of here.
See? See?
I don't know, President Tommy. This seems a little discriminatory. He didn't do anything.
Shut up, Smee. I'm the president. I do what I want.
No, you don't. Samuel Chase is acquitted.
Dun, dun dun!
Your Honor, just because I happen to be the former vice president and I happen to be traveling through the Midwest with my friends with guns to have secret meetings doesn't mean that I'm planning on starting my own republic and want to invade the Capitol because Thomas Jefferson and Alexander Hamilton ruined my life, those filthy traitors. See, Your Honor? See? I don't see your evidence, Tommy Pickles. I'm the president. I don't need evidence.
Are you seriously talking back to me again? Sit down, Mr. President. In my courtroom, you're a citizen just like everyone else. Aaron Burr, you're acquitted. The evidence against you is inadmissible hot trash.
Seriously?
Dun dun, dun.
Your Honor,
my speculating friend over here sold me a piece of land in Georgia. Georgia sold that piece of land to him. Now all of a sudden, Georgia's calling the deal off and trying to pay less than what we paid to get it. Girl, please.
Georgia, what do you have to say about this?
Well, Chief Justice Johnny Bravo, we made a law
unconstitutional. Y'all really made a whole law to try and get out of a contract? Get out of my courtroom.
See what I mean? This man is slamming that gavel and taking names. This guy was so freaking decisive that he ended up creating a bunch of Supreme Court rules that justices try to follow to this day.
Johnny Bravo decides whether Congress is allowed to be super disrespectful to other countries under the law of nations. Johnny Bravo decides if federal or state laws are real laws or not. Johnny Bravo decides what privileges a president does or doesn't get to have when they're sitting in the courtroom. Johnny Bravo decides. Oh, and of course Johnny was doing other stuff while being a judge, because like I said, he doesn't want to be there. He's just trying to make decisions and go home. What other stuff, you ask? Oh, writing Jorge Washington's biography, lol. The Democrat Republicans were all like, this is an insult, but do you really expect the party of Thomas Jefferson to not make it about them? Whatever. Historians love that book. It came out in freaking 5 volumes because I guess Johnny was that freaking bored in the courtroom. And now it's time for that tried and true question. What about the slaves?
He was a hypocrite about it as usual. Like, he thought slavery was super evil or whatever, but this dude was also from Virginia, so you could bet your bottom dollar this man had slaves most of his life. And he really wasn't all about freeing the slaves, because he knew about Haiti, and if the slaves were all freed, they might decide to use their freedom to bear arms, and well, basically he thought slavery was wrong, but he thought it was wrong with a shrug and a wink, nudge, nudge, you feel me? Like, when the whole send free black people back to Africa so they can become colonizers movement came around, Johnny Bravo was super into it. He even founded his own chapter of Kappa Kappa Colonize Africa, right there in Virginia. He was also in a bunch of court cases, pro bono, obviously, where he tried to win freedom for mixed people. Interesting how he didn't go further than mixed. He even won a case back in his Virginia court days that was supposed to free like 400 slaves. Oh no, it didn't actually happen. That case was reversed in appeals court. Also, at first, everyone thought, you know, Johnny had about a dozen slaves in his house, you know, which is still terrible, by the way. But then we kept digging, and the dude probably had hundreds of them. We also found out that this dude was buying and selling them too. Slavery is evil? Puh. More like slavery is evil, where's my check? But I talked enough about his work life and his evil side hustle. What's happening at home, Well, Johnny Bravo and his wife Polly, okay, her name's actually freaking Mary, but we're calling her Polly, okay? I'm tired of this Mary Elizabeth Infinity Gauntlet pocket universe, okay? Where was I? Oh yeah, they met during the war. I know, how romantic. They got married at a cousin's house and they had like 10 kids, only 6 survived, you know how it is. 2 of them died in Polly's belly and 2 of them died as babies, so if she looks unhealthy and sad all the time, that's why. But their other kids were Tommy, Jackie, Mary, James, and Edward. Johnny Bravo freaking loved his house that got built in 1790. It was just a nice place to sit and read a book with a cuppa in your hand, you feel me? When his dad kicked the bucket, he got the whole estate. For like 3 months a year, he was living in D.C. because Supreme Court duty calls. Sometimes he'd leave his house for a couple of weeks to do some fun North Carolina judge stuff for funsies. In 1810, he bought some famous timeshare log house or something. Long story short, Johnny Bravo was a man of means. He wasn't all that super religious, like he believed in the king of all cosmos, but when people try to convert him to Michael Jesus, he'd be all like, Jesus? That doesn't sound like something that would taste good on my sandwich. No thanks. I mean, he was into that Freemason stuff, though. He was even a Grandmaster Poobah for a year. So if you want to accuse him of secretly playing Mancala with his Freemason friends, it's probably truesies. And now that the dude didn't even win squat in the 1812 election, he's definitely got more time to do things like play Mancala with his Freemason friends. Speaking of friends, what is Johnny Marshall Law doing these days? Well, in 1814, he hired his friend named Bobby Mills to build some monumental church or whatever. You see, there was this big fat theater fire that I almost talked about on the podcast, but whatever, like 72 people died, you know. This is back in the day when we didn't have waterbenders on hand. Anyways, they died, and our guy Johnny was shook. So, basically, this monumental church was built as a commemoration. Good for you, Johnny M. Good for you. And as for the courtroom, well, all this 1812 war stuff is happening, and everybody was super worried about what to do with captured ships. I mean, some of the justices wanted to do the whole eye for an eye thing and do to the captured ships exactly what the T-Sippers did to the Yankees. But John Marshall was all like, quote, hold up, wait. We can't be doing all this eye for an eye stuff. Like, that's why courtrooms exist, okay? And only the big boy federal courts can make this decision. I see you, Pennsylvania. Up, don't glare at me like that. Do you want to go into timeout, Pennsylvania Appeals Court? Unquote. So, yeah, that's
the latest. I mean, obviously this dude's a VP candidate. Like, last time, he was a PP candidate. A lot of people still really like him, even if the courtroom was getting a little bit sassy nowadays. If you got something to say about this episode, about the podcast, or about, I don't know, cherry picking, you can find Garbled Twistery on Facebook and Twitter, or you can head to garbledtwistery.net and send a message in the contact section, or you can email me. My email is Rafiq, that's R-A-F-I-Q, at garbledtwistery.net. Also, I have Patreon, so if you go to patreon.com and find Garbled Twistery, you'll become a person who has not only the access, but the ability to determine what topics get to be Patreon-exclusive bonus content, and the suggestion box is open. So come on over if you want a tailor-made episode. Anyways, next time, a new challenger has entered the vice presidential scene. It's James Ross. This one's going to be a real slobber knocker, folks.
This is the ending. I'm ending it now.
This is back in the day when we didn't have waterbenders on hand.